Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here today to share the Dharma together. As with all these Teishos and Dharma talks, please feel free to change your posture as needed, but do so quietly and unobtrusively. And however you sit, keep the back straight and the head up. At the beginning of almost every Teisho or Dharma discourse at this center, the teacher admonishes us to listen with an open mind and an open heart. And what does that mean? Do not try to analyze, judge, or even understand. Let the words flow through you like the wind through the trees. The moment you try to seize upon the felicitous phrase, as Kapila-Roshi called them, you fall back into words and ideas that will rattle around in your head and become just another distraction that takes you away from practice. There are many aspects of practice that can turn into traps. The desire to get through koans, hoping for insight, or the desire to immediately and fully understand the more obscure writings of masters like Dogen or Nagarjuna. Teachers are often asked in Doksan whether one should pursue reading when one is working on koans especially. My answer to that is a very definite, ironclad, well, it depends. If you latch onto words and start noodling around with them, then no, one should probably not do a lot of reading. If you read for recognition, then maybe it can help. There are many aspects of the road to practice is without beginning and without end. We must walk that road continuously. Do not pause. Do not become satisfied with some place of enlightenment, some thought of realization. The real thing has nothing to do, whatever, with the discursive mind that comes up with or grabs onto. Today we'll look at case number 11 in the Bianlu, that's the Blue Cliff Record, or the Hekigan Roku in Japanese. Huang Bo addressed his assembled monks and said, "You are all eaters of brewer's lees. If you go about on pilgrimages like this, when can you meet today? Don't you know that in all the land of Tang there is no Zen teacher?" A monk stepped forward and said, "But surely there are those in all regions who reform monks and govern assemblies of disciples." Huang Bo said, "I didn't say there is no Zen, only that there is no Zen teacher." Huang Bo, whose Japanese name is Obaku, died in 850 of the Common Era. He was one of those dominating figures in ancient Chinese Chan. I tend to think of Zhao Zhou as an old, dusty monk whom you might not notice until you spoke with him. But Huang Bo was said to be 7 feet tall. He was a Dharma heir of Bai Zhang and also the teacher of Lin Ji and Mu Zhou, both of whom inherited the master's ferocity. Through Lin Ji, Huang Bo is one of our direct Dharma ancestors. He plays a crucial role in case number 2 of the Wu Men Guan, the Wild Fox. Huang Bo was one of the clearest and most eloquent exponents of the way. His Zen might be expressed, as much as one can express the inexpressible in words, by the following rather famous quote from a record made by Pei Zhu, a devoted disciple of Huang Bo. It reads, "All the Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but the one mind. besides which nothing exists. This mind, which is without beginning, is unborn and indestructible. It is not green nor yellow, and has neither form nor appearance. It does not belong to the categories of things which exist or do not exist, nor can it be thought of in terms of new or old. It is neither long nor short, big nor small, for it transcends all limits, measures, names, traces, and comparisons. It is that which you see before you. Begin to reason about it, and you at once fall into error. It is like the boundless void which cannot be fathomed or measured. The one mind alone is the Buddha, and there is no distinction between the Buddha and sentient beings, but that sentient beings are attached to forms and so seek externally for Buddhahood. By their very seeking, they lose it, for that is using the Buddha to seek for the Buddha, and using mind to grasp mind. Even though they do their utmost for a full eon, they will not be able to attain to it. They do not know that if they put a stop to conceptual thought and forget their anxiety, the Buddha will appear before them. For this mind is the Buddha, and the Buddha is all living beings. It is not the less for being manifested in ordinary beings, nor is it greater for being manifested in Buddhas. Can't put it any better than that. Maybe these words give you ideas about practice, something to think about. But if you hang on to words and noodle around with them in your head, that's not practice. Huangbo addressed his assembled monks and said, "You are all eaters of brewer's lees." Brewer's lees are the dregs that are left in the fermentation vat after beer, or maybe sake, has been drained off. Brewer's lees, the remnants, the leftovers that have no value except maybe for fertilizer. So is Huangbo insulting his monks, putting them down as being too concerned with useless stuff? If you keep messing with words and ideas, even those of Huangbo or of Zhaozhou or Linji or even those of the Buddha, you are in the same state as the monks that Huangbo is admonishing. It's all dregs. But the path that we all walk has to start somewhere. How many have come to practice through words, reading a book like Three Pillars of Zen, Taking the Path of Zen, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, or listening to a teacher at seminar or teisho? They're all dregs, footprints of the ox, and a necessary step for most of us. In the first of the 10 ox-herding pictures, the ox-herder is shown leaving the house, a rope coiled over his shoulder, seeking the ox, which is the metaphor for the great truth, Buddha nature, as something outside of himself or herself, caught in the world of time, space, and karma. In the second picture, he spots the footprints of the ox. These are the teachings, the words of a master or of the Buddha. But the footprints are not the ox, any more than the dregs are drinkable beer. The teachings, no matter how profound or how beautifully expressed, are not the reality. So here is the seeker in the early stages of practice, faced with verbal, conceptual teachings, sutras maybe, talks by teachers, or these days seminars or training sessions, the dregs. There's no choice but to swallow them as best one can. And that is fine, but don't ever be satisfied with the dregs. The Buddha, when he initially left home, sought out the greatest spiritual teachers of the age, but all he got from them was Brewer's Lees. He was not satisfied. None of the teachings led to what he sought. It's actually not all that difficult to imbibe words and concepts and to parrot them back, or maybe creatively reword them. It's like adding food coloring to the dregs. Maybe it makes them more attractive. And what about thoughts? More dregs. To indulge in thoughts about the way, no matter how profound and how attractive, is not the way. In the third ox herding picture, the herder sees the tail of the ox sticking up from behind a bush. The real thing at last. This is Kensho, the initial awakening experience, the watershed. Maybe it is a profound, life-changing experience, or maybe a transient, shallow one, or something in between. It doesn't matter. When you are in a dark cavern, lighting even a small candle profoundly changes your perception of the dark. We follow the footprints and imbibe the dregs, and if we persist, we eventually see beyond. But in order to see the ox, no matter how vaguely or partially, you have to lift up your eyes and see past the footprints. And that's only the third picture. The seven remaining pictures depict the lifelong process of refining and deepening that initial insight. What about Kensho? Are we satisfied with that? This is not to besmirch the memory of Kaplo Roshi, but at the Rochester Zen Center, there was for years a kind of culture that looked at Kensho as the be-all and end-all of practice. It was quite common for people to work very hard to get through Mu, as if that were really possible, but soon after, to disappear. It's instructive to note that at Sesshin in Rochester, the people working on Mu, or another initial koan, outnumbered those working on subsequent koans. Here, it's almost the complete reverse. That tells us something about our members. They are willing to continue to walk the path to the end. Kensho is not enlightenment. It's not even close. It establishes the basis for further practice. Having had that initial insight, one can continue to practice with greater confidence. You're no longer flying blind. But if you stop there, you fall into the trap of thinking and talking and fond memory. You are back on the diet of dregs. Our abbot emeritus, Danan Henry Roshi, used to rail about people who would go to a sesshin or some kind of retreat and maybe have a genuine experience and then go home and write a book about it along the lines of what I did on my Zen vacation. The Buddha finally realized that he had to go off on his own to explore the great matter for himself. Even in the early stages of practice, we have to develop an independent, questioning spirit. Maybe even a bit of iconoclastic cussedness. The footprints may indicate a direction, but you can't be satisfied with just footprints or with words or thoughts. Wang Bo goes on, "If you go about on pilgrimages like this, when can you meet today?" I suspect that most of his monks had some degree of insight, and yet old habits are hard to break. It was traditional for monks to travel on pilgrimage for part of the year, visiting other monasteries and maybe engaging in Dharma combat, testing their own as well as the teacher's understanding. That's okay, that's good, for a while. But the trap is one of becoming a spiritual tourist. If you read Nexus or other New Age rags, you will see many ads selling the next step in your spiritual journey. It's always just a little ways ahead. The next workshop, the next seminar, the next book. To make a fetish of a spiritual journey is to walk through a forest grabbing leaves from every tree you pass, but never actually climbing one. Zhao Zhou said, "Others seek, I find." We cannot just seek, we have to find. We have to find our own truth for ourselves. Dongshan Shouzhu was just such a tourist when he came to Yunmen's place in case 15 of the Wumenguan. Dongshan came to study with Yunmen. Yunmen asked, "Where have you come from?" Dongshan said, "From Chatu." Yunmen asked, "Where were you during the summer training period?" Dongshan said, "I was at Postu Monastery in Hunan." Yunmen asked, "When did you leave there?" Dongshan said, "On the 25th of August." Yunmen said, "I spare you 60 blows. A devastating put down. The next day, Dongshan came again to Yunmen and asked, "Yesterday you said you spared me 60 blows. I don't know where I was at fault." Yunmen said, "You rice bag, why do you wander from west of the river to south of the lake?" With this, Dongshan had a great satori. "Yes, you rice bag, what are you expecting to find at the river or the lake? All you will find out there is brewer's lees. Don't mistake them for the real thing." "When can you meet today?" "Where will you meet yourself?" "Outside this moment." "Is there anything outside this moment?" How simple it is to let go of all conceptual thought, and yet how hard. But eventually we must. We can't live on the diet of ideas, notions, and dregs forever. You don't get anywhere by standing and looking at a road sign. You have to walk the path. You have to go into the depths of your own practice, your own zazen. Don't you know that in all the land of Tang, there is no Zen teacher? All the land of Tang, no Zen teacher. What about Japan? What about the United States? Are there no Zen teachers anywhere? Buddhism is a religion of complete personal responsibility. We cannot rely on some concept like teacher, guru, master, sensei forever. Eventually these become crutches. My teacher says this, my guru says that. The most important job of the teacher is to protect the student from the influence of the teacher. A monk stepped forward and said, "But surely there are those in all regions who reform monks and govern assemblies of disciples." A reasonable question, especially in Tang Dynasty China, which was crawling with deeply realized Zen masters. There are Zen centers, monasteries, temples all over the world. There are Zen seat teachers, Zen students, buildings, temples, fire trucks, children, birds, and animals. How can you say there are no Zen teachers? Huang Bo said, "I didn't say there is no Zen, only that there is no teacher of Zen." If you truly realize what some call Zen, if you live that Zen, walk, talk, stand, sit that Zen, then there are indeed no Zen teachers, no Zen students, no buildings, no temples, no fire trucks, children, birds, or animals. There is nothing out there, nothing separate or distinct from your own self. But what about Zen itself? Is there no Zen? I didn't say there is no Zen. Note that Huang Bo refuses to fall into the trap of saying yes, there is, or no, there isn't. He will not say, I will not say, I won't say. When will you meet today? Where will you meet your true teacher, your true nature? How do we get beyond the dregs? Can we avoid them? Answer, no, you don't. You don't go beyond them or avoid them. You go into them. Imbibe the dregs. Eat the dregs. Listen to the words. Question them. Digest them fully and completely. If you do, then those dregs become the poison that kills and the poison that gives life. The poison that masters like Hakuin and Xiangyan spread limitlessly. Those remnants, which begin as thoughts, words, concepts about and of the truth, become the truth itself. How can they not be? But do not become complacent. Look carefully. Look Mara, the temptation of ego, directly in the face, without fear or favor. Look at every thought, feeling, concept, notion that arises, and see it for what it is. To do so is to walk the edge of the abyss. It can be frightening. If we see thoughts which we identify with the self and see they have no substance, what happens to the self? So we have teishos, koans, chanting, dharma and senior talks. There are books, many, many books. There's nothing inherently wrong with any of them. They are footprints and they point the way. But no matter how eloquent or seductive, don't get caught. Enjoy them. Then return to the practice. Each day, each moment, return to the practice. Enter into your Zazen, which is the Buddha's Zazen. And eventually, the words of the masters, even those which may have once seemed obscure, will appear as the familiar greetings of an old and dear friend. And together with all beings, we realize the way.